Hi gang, thanks for downloading this classic episode of News Fighters. Just a reminder, if you're looking for new original episodes of News Fighters, they're now over on the Irrational Fear podcast feed. So search for Irrational Fear on your podcasting app or go to irrationalfear.com for all new episodes of News Fighters. In the meantime, enjoy this classic News Fighters episode.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Sans Pants Radio, Australia's most duckest of a half podcast network.
This is News Fighters,
where we fight the news
so you don't have to.
With Dylan Behan.
We're back. Hello, fighters. Welcome to News Fighters for today, Friday, June the 18th, 2021. I'm your host, Dylan Bain, back with a comedic look at the big stories of the week in Australian news media and political hypocrisy. And the biggest story and most exciting news for me in months, I got my first COVID jab. Yeah! Yes, hard to believe, and it wasn't because I physically resemble a 70-year-old. Anyways, more on that later as comedy writer Dave Bluestein stops by and we compare vaccine jab stories. But first up, it's our national buffoon's European vacation.
The Australian Prime Minister has arrived in the UK to begin a weekend of talks as a guest at the G7 summit in Cornwall.
Scott Morrison has just touched down in the UK for the G7 summit, which is officially underway in Cornwall.
Yes, the G7 summit was on in Cornwall, and our Prime Minister Scott Morrison was there. On the periphery.
Scott Morrison is there as an onlooker.
Scott Morrison was there as an observer.
Scott Morrison wasn't invited to the royal reception here.
There's never been a more important time for Australia to be sitting around the table with the world's leading democracies.
Yes, sitting around the table, just not the grown-ups table. We were, in fact, at the kiddies table, looking up at the big economies making the big decisions. Okay, keep eating your vegetables and growing your renewables sector. Maybe you can sit at the big grown-ups table one day, Australia. In fact, our absence was even noticed by our official head of state, the Queen, who was even like a, where the bloody hell were you to Scott Morrison when they met at Windsor Castle?
So you were down there, but at Windsor Hill in Cornwall.
No, that was just the G7 members. We had
we were
an extension partner, as they call them.
Yes, we're an extension partner. You know that term, extension partner? It's also how Charles referred to Camilla for all those years. Anyway, it doesn't matter anyway that we were just a onlooking extension partner, as Scott Morrison was late.
But as you can see, it's a little bit of a foggy mess at the moment, and that means that no planes can land at the airport here. So Scott Morrison's flight has been diverted to an airbase just outside Oxford. It means that he and the Australian delegation now face a car trip of about 4 or 5 hours down here to the summit venue.
As you can see, the weather has not been kind, and that has led to Scott Morrison's plane being diverted.
Yes, bad weather in England. Who could have predicted that? Turns out the delayed landing didn't impact Scott Morrison's plans too much anyway.
So he had all of that time on the road. He ended up having to cancel all of his meetings today. So essentially, he's done nothing so far. Aside from stopping off for a pub lunch on his drive down here to Cornwall yesterday, certainly in terms of official engagements, he really hasn't done anything.
Yes, but even on the drive to Cornwall, our Prime Minister couldn't avoid controversy.
One photo has garnered the worst response, and that's a photo showing Scott Morrison having a pub lunch on his way to the G7. There's been backlash from Australians calling it tone deaf, Pete, because Australia is still locked in.
Yes, our Prime Minister stopped for a pub lunch. How dare he? While everyone in Australia is also stuck here able to go to the pub for lunch. I don't understand the outrage. No, seriously, though, Scott Morrison had a four-hour drive. What was he supposed to do? Eat a packet of petrol station knickknacks and hobnobs and keep driving? Or was our head of government supposed to stop off at a drive-through McDonald's? Because I heard he's not legally allowed to set foot in a McDonald's since Engadine. Oh, whoops, sorry, my Engadine McDonald's joke had triggered the lazy satire buzzer there. I apologise. Anyways, onto the G7 itself, and while ScoMo was speeding up the A30, getting Walker's crumbs on his lap, Boris Johnson was welcoming the main players and reminiscing about how bad the coronavirus pandemic was.
You've all been going through the most wretched pandemic our countries have faced for our lifetimes, maybe longer, much longer. And I actually think this is a meeting that genuinely needs to happen, because we need to make sure that we learn the lessons from the pandemic. We need to make sure that we don't repeat some of the errors that we doubtless made.
Yeah, Boris was like, how bad was that pandemic? Jeez, whew, some countries really stuffed that up. Feel bad for whoever led the United Kingdom last year. Woo, they made some bad mistakes. Oh, was that me? Oops. Also at the G7, the other big topic, aside from how bad they stuffed up COVID, was, of course, climate change.
This summit has made it clear that clean is in and coal is out.
There were promises to do more on climate change, the summit resolving to phase out coal-fired power stations and recommitting to zero net greenhouse gas emissions by 2050.
World leaders agreeing to stop new government support for coal power by the end of 2021.
Yes, finally, the world's biggest economies have decided to stop funding coal. Surely Australia isn't going to be left behind on this one. They're not just going to stand on the sidelines and tell everyone they're wrong, like a dodgy dad yelling at a umpire at his kids' soccer game. Wait, no, they did.
World leaders agreeing to stop new government support for coal power by the end of 2021.
Australia has no plans or is not pursuing anything that could be described in that way.
But once again, Scott Morrison has refused to commit to that 2050 target for zero net emissions.
We're not a signatory to the G7 communique.
Yes, everybody in the world is going to be off coal in a few decades, and we're going to keep digging it out of the ground and selling it to absolutely nobody like an out-of-touch grandpa at a flea market. Yeah, look, kids, it's Titanic on VHS. It's just like watching it on the big screen. You love the big screen. All right, how about Spaghetti Incident on CD then? Everyone loves Spaghetti Incident. And meanwhile, back in Australia, our acting Prime Minister, Nationals leader Michael McCormack is like, we love coal. We're going to have it forever.
Australia's Deputy Prime Minister has declared coal will be around for many years to come. He made that prediction after the world's seven biggest economies agreed to phase out government support for coal-fired power stations.
55,000 people are employed in the coal industry, and $66 billion of exports that pays for a lot of hospitals, pays for a lot of schools, pays for a lot of barista machines that produces the coffee that inner city types sit around and drink and talk about the death of coal.
What is this coalition government's obsession with having a culture war about coffee? Everybody in Australia loves a decent coffee. Get over it. We're the country that invented McCafe. I was just on a regional tour with Irrational Fear, and every little town had a bloody trendy coffee shop now. Who does he think he's alienating? In fact, Michael McCormack even promotes how good the coffee is in the country now when he tries to get people to move there.
And there's many, many jobs going in regional Australia at the moment, not just on farms, but in accountancy practices, law firms. Great place, big enough in which to get a good cup of coffee, small enough to care, Carl, I always say it.
Yes, good job, Michael McCormack. Promote those country town coffee shops where people can sit around and talk about how much they hate coal on their way to their coal mining jobs. Good job. Anyways, back to the G7. Of course, the real reason Scott Morrison was there was for some one-on-one time with his new best buddy, US President Joe Biden. So, how did that go?
Tonight, the PM's first meeting with Joe Biden crashed by an unexpected guest on the sidelines of the G7 summit.
Unusually, an anticipated bilateral meeting with the US president turned into a three-man affair.
We do know that Scott Morrison wanted a one-on-one meeting with Joe Biden. He hasn't managed to get that at this G7 summit. Instead, Boris Johnson was joining in, and this is how Scott Morrison is selling it.
I would say it was a meeting of great friends and allies.
Ugh, don't you hate that? It's a bit like if you're in high school and you finally build up the courage to ask a girl out on a date to the movies and she agrees and you're over the moon. But when you get there, she's brought along your friend Billy, who's from another school. Ugh. And then on Monday, you try and spin it positively at school and you say this.
I would say it was a meeting of great friends and allies.
And if that wasn't enough, after the G7, Scott Morrison has to hang out with Boris Johnson again, this time in London to sign a free trade agreement. Well, kind of. It's an agreement for a free trade agreement.
Prime Minister Scott Morrison and his British counterpart have this evening signed off on the broad terms of a free trade agreement.
Prime Ministers Boris Johnson and Scott Morrison signing off on an in-principle agreement for a free trade deal between the two countries to be completed by the end of the year.
Yes, and it turns out many in Labour here are in favour of the UK free trade deal. All the backbenchers want to see if they can swap Anthony Albanese for UK Labour leader Keir Starmer. Yes, Keir Starmer jokes. That's what you come to News Fighters for. Everyone loves Keir Starmer jokes. So then how was this a historic trade deal between a former coloniser and its colony sealed with a antique fountain pen signing ceremony on board a replica of the HMS Endeavour, with a trading of flags or a handing back of stolen Indigenous artefacts from the British Museum? Nope.
This was the moment the two leaders delivered the news overnight, standing shoulder to shoulder and exchanging biscuits.
You give us Tim Tams, we give you penguins, you give us Vegemite, we give you Marmite.
They swapped their little jars of Vegemite and Marmite yesterday, so it's all happening. Do you
Tim
think that's
Tams,
a good deal?
Of course.
I didn't understand what we were getting back from Tim Tams. What are penguins?
I'm not familiar with penguins either. Sounds like Australia got ripped off in that exchange, don't you think?
They're not as good as a Tim Tams.
Yes, it was in fact the greatest biscuit-based diplomacy since the famous ginger nuts at the Treaty of Versailles in 1919. So what do we get out of the deal? Well, aside from a packet of penguins.
The new deal will eventually deliver cheaper British cars, Scotch whisky and biscuits.
Australian lamb, beef and sugar are likely to be exported into Britain in greater volumes, and winemakers are also a winner, with tariffs cut.
Under the deal, tariffs on other Australian agricultural exports like dairy and sugar will be slowly phased out. Lamb and beef products will be tariff-free in 15 years.
Yes, so Australian meat producers have 15 years till I have unrestricted tariff-free imports into the UK. Guys, I don't think meat lasts that long. I had a packet of mince turned brown in my fridge in a week once. 15 years, you might want to freeze some of that beef. And the deal also includes some immigration and visa changes for when borders reopen to travellers in, I don't know, 2035 probably.
It'll see restrictions on working visas relaxed, with the age limit on working holiday visas increased to 35.
Other changes include British backpackers being able to stay longer down under without having to work on farms.
Yes, great news there for eternally developmentally arrested Aussies and Brits who can now put off getting their lives together and keep backpacking till they're 35. And with Brits no longer on our farms whinging about getting sunburnt picking our fruits and vegetables for less than the minimum wage, we could be facing labour shortages. But wait, there's a plan.
The Nationals say they've done a deal to establish a new agriculture visa to replace backpackers lost under the free trade agreement with the UK.
The visa would allow citizens from countries including Indonesia, the Philippines and Singapore to work in Australia for up to 3 years.
Yes, the coalition stopped the boats, but now they need to start the planes to pick the fruit, the goats to cotties to make the cordial that I like best. Oh, hey, government, if you're looking for some dedicated agriculture workers, I did hear about this great Sri Lankan family that used to have a job at a Queensland abattoir that they're keen to get back to. Maybe you could work on that. Anyway, Scott Morrison's Euro trip didn't stop there. He also swung by France so the journalists could use the few French words they remember from school.
And he wasn't quite ready to say au revoir to Europe, ducking across to Paris to say bonjour to President Macron.
Yes, and the Prime Minister also said s'il vous plaît and merci beaucoup before they shared an entree of plat du jour. Comme ci, comme ça, où est la bibliothèque? And finally, Scott Morrison made sure he made time to stop in and visit an old friend. or just the only guy he knew in Paris who could translate a room service menu for him.
And there was time for just a brief meeting with the now head of the OECD, former finance minister Matthias Cormann.
Hey Matthias, remember when we flew you around the world in a private jet for months at taxpayers' expense so you could lobby to get this job while thousands of Australians were stuck, stranded overseas? good times. Okay, so ScoMo European vacation done. What next?
The Prime Minister will return to 2 weeks quarantine in the lodge.
2 weeks? That's going to need a few packets of...
Tim Tams, of course.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
All right, now on Newsfighters. One of the advantages of being an aging Gen X, Y, millennial cusp hipster is it actually put me in the bracket of the 40 to 49-year-old eligibility for my COVID vaccine. And so last week, I got my first shot. And someone else who got their first shot is one of Australia's greatest comedy writers and also screenwriter and funny man, lapsed comedian extraordinaire, Dave Bluestein, who joins me now. Hey, Dave, how are you going? First of all, what made you want to get vaccinated? Was it the government's dynamic and exciting ad campaign featuring the talking head of Dr. Nick Coatsworth? Were you swept up in Coatsworth mania?
You know what? I have paid so little attention to the government's federal rollout because it was very easy to lose focus. And that I didn't even, like when you said Coatsworth, I was expecting Norman Swan, maybe. I don't know. I've lost track.
I'm afraid that was not
the motivation. Purely on the level of science and just basic knowing that vaccines are important.
So you're interested in not dying of COVID. Do I understand that correctly?
I'm interested in not dying of COVID, but more to the point, I'm also interested in nobody dying of COVID. I think that's
exactly
the thing.
Yes, I think it's important for everyone. Some people heard I was getting vaccinated and they were like, oh, is he going overseas soon? I'm like, no, I just want the pandemic to end. I want the borders to reopen and lockdowns to stop and to go visit my family and friends overseas. Like, I think a lot of people don't realize how important this is.
Oh, absolutely. It's just that basic thinking, you know, outside yourself and thinking and wanting it to be easy for everyone to do. Like, there should be no roadblocks. There should be no obstacles to just... I'm more than happy to wait my turn. Like, I wasn't in a rush to do it. When there was an opportunity, I took the opportunity. But even when I got there, like, there were people like sort of running ahead of me in the line. I just thought, like, those few minutes are not going to make a massive difference to that.
No. I waited my turn as well. I mean, if other people are vaccine hesitant, and you know, I waited till my mum got her first jab before I registered my interest because I didn't want to. I figured she was definitely more of a priority than I was, and then I put my name down, and then I got called up. And if that's because other people are hesitant, then I'll happily go in the queue in front of
them.
Yeah,
for sure. I mean, like, I have chronic asthma, and that doesn't come up as like a, you know, a priority issue. I've got old people in my family, but again, that's not there. No one who's sort of like in those top tiers, no one who's particularly immunocompromised or anything like that.
So, in terms of the registration, I know we were both saying we felt a little bit bad, like it wasn't our term, and nowhere did I feel that than when you had to list your. It was like a list of occupations or eligibilities. Did you see that? And it was like ambulance worker, aged care worker. And you scroll down this whole list and you're like, well, I guess I'm general public. I'm not quite sure how I got to crash this party.
The hospital that I applied to, because I actually had two hospitals I had to apply to. I got all the way to the end. So you enter all your information and then see if there's an appointment available, and there was, but there wasn't a follow-up one. So
for your second dose,
that's right. So I couldn't book, but rather than going well, what about in a week's time, or that's okay, let's see where else there's stuff available, I had to pretend I hadn't applied, go back and start from the very beginning, find a different hospital that was further away.
Oh, so you select the venue first. You select the venue first. For everyone overseas or interstate, I don't know how you did it, but I registered my interest with the federal government and didn't hear anything. And then I registered my interest with the state government and got an email back. And then a few weeks later, you're approved and you go to this website. I think my hospital was selected already because it was like, here's your local hospital, you apply here, and then you fill in all the forms.
I was checking my email like nonstop for the full 2 weeks until it actually came around. Yeah. And I think it did select one for me at first.
Right.
By default. But you had the option to pick somewhere else. So I sort of went back and clicked on that original email link and then started again and changed my – I didn't change my location. I just kind of widened my search because there were –
And I think I know overseas that, you know, they're popping up, having little pop-up clinics at everywhere, you know, pharmacies and everything. But I think in Australia, I think for over 50s who can get AstraZeneca, that's largely through GPs because that can be stored in a fridge. But I think for our age group, under 50s, we get it's Pfizer.
It's a very Australian vaccine you can store in a fridge.
Store it in a fridge. I was going to say, there'll be a lot of, after the pandemic, there'll be a lot of cheap, good wine fridges going from being sold by local GP offices. Store at that we'll perfect see, 7 degrees.
I think we'll see a big boom in craft vaccines.
Yes.
with the great labels.
Yeah. But then for us, because Pfizer has to be frozen at minus 70 or something, so we all have to go to these big hubs, but I think New South Wales really only has one at Homebush, so we had to go to a hospital, whereas I think everyone in Victoria and other states, there's all these big hubs everywhere.
I think in Victoria it's coordinated through through a phone, like a phone service, which is, there's no way that would work. I mean, I was on the phone for about 40 minutes until I gave up.
To try and change your venue, correct?
Yeah, exactly. But my understanding from my family who are in Melbourne, some of whom do have jobs that got them higher up the queue. So I don't know if it's for everybody, but they went through a central phone service. Whereas I think Queensland has more of a rock up kind of situation.
And New South Wales has no walk-ins that I'm aware of. I did a quick Google. I don't think anyone in New South Wales can just rock up. But in Victoria, they did have that. And that ties into something I noticed, which I'll talk about later. When I got to the hospital, there was no signage anywhere because they didn't want people walking up.
It was like
a secret club or a hidden bar or a rave, you know. There was just an unmarked white tent with a security guard, and I was like, is this the place? Wink wink.
I'm sure it is easier to find a heroin dealer in Sydney than it is to find a vaccine. But
definitely.
But so the reason I went on this tangent is
keep going.
Jobs. So you said, like, you know, general public. Yep. There's actually two at the hospital I went. There was other and general public. So I was like, and they weren't in alphabetical order. They weren't in any kind of logical order. They were
who
just
is not the general public? Who is not? I thought general public covered everyone. Is there some people who are like, oh, I'm not a member of society. I'm other.
That's right. Hello, human. Yes. I would like your vaccine.
Yes, I'm an alien, other. Yeah.
But it was very obvious that they're just like madly adding things to these lists as national and state policies change. So things like, okay, so some of the things was kind of like, you know, like I'm a cis straight, relatively white guy. But things like, you know, having to say who, for my contact, there was a huge list of what their relationship was to me. Very gender normative. I couldn't just say spouse.
Your emergency
contact.
Yeah.
Yeah. I could specify that it's my maiden, my maternal aunt, for example. I've got no idea why that's critical. If it was my dad's sister, for example.
What do they ring? Are you Dave's paternal aunt or maternal
that's
aunt?
Right.
Oh, sorry, paternal aunt. Sorry, I can't talk to you. Yes.
Like, it starts to feel like, you know, those people that paranoia lately about online forms and password questions. Like, who is your maternal aunt? I had to pick a religion, and my background is Jewish. I don't see I don't see myself as religious. I don't see myself as an atheist either, because I feel that's like a religious position that I don't hold.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to. It was like a question you had to answer. And I kind of think for some people, I totally understand if they're going to hospital why that's an important question to answer. But I kind of felt like it should be optional. Like there were a lot of extra steps I had to go through that just felt really unnecessary.
And this list had like 100 religions on it. Like this was not
like a lot. Like,
I was at work and I'm like, oh, fill out this form. It'll take a minute. And it took quite a while. There were so many options. It took quite a while.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, which was great. Like in terms of, I love, you know, little bits of trivia. I love learning things. It was not the point, the time where I wanted to learn about the existence of lots of religions that had no idea that they were there, but that's what I had to do. I think my favorite question was, do you want your record not to be sent to my health? Do you want your vaccine record not to be sent to my health record? And the default answer was no.
Yes.
I spent like a good 5 minutes trying to untangle like
double
there was,
negative
there was
much?
A triple negative. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Well, because clearly they want, I think we're not America where you get a piece of paper that you lose that's your vaccine record that you then show to get into, you know, to travel or to get into concerts. Here it's, luckily we already have my health record and it's already being done digitally. And I think they're trying to nudge people to do that so that they have a record of it, so that when they, if a country does need a record of your vaccine history, you can print it out or show it on your phone in a few years' time. So it makes sense, but they know people don't like my health record, so they're trying to trick them
that's right
into using it.
See, I don't have a problem with my health record, but the thing is about that question, do you want your record not to be sent to my health record? No. That came after, on the same page, you have to answer both questions in order to progress, the question of do you need a translator?
Do you not don't need a translator? Imagine if McDonald's did this. Do you not don't need want fries with that default no?
Probably end up with a much healthier population.
Yes.
But yeah, no, it was just like, you know, if English was my second language, I've got no idea how I'd cope with this process. How I'd actually get a vaccine.
True.
And I suppose I could, you know, wait for an hour on the phone, but again, like, just take away those barriers. There's a lot of people talk about Scotty from marketing. He does have, you know, like a marketing and tourism background in terms of his career. If not his education, I'm not sure. But so at the moment, a lot of my job is in digital learning, and user experience is such an important part of that. Like, and for marketing as well, you just want to make things simple for people. The more obstacles you put up, which is, you know, it's the whole basis of their immigration platform. So they know this, right? The more obstacles you put up, the less people are going to want to do it. And there is nothing more important right now than people just doing this. That it's easy. That you just, you know, I'm eligible. I'd like one. Yeah, here you go. Sure, it's going to be in a week or 2 weeks or whatever, but just to have it easy for people, that seems so critical.
Yes, they need to make it a lot simpler. Personally, I found the paperwork not too bad. I'm used to dealing with bureaucratic nightmares working at the ABC on and off. I found my experience actually getting the vax and going to the venue the most troubling, because first of all, you get the email that says it's at the hospital. I go, great, go to the hospital. I'm like, where's the, I can't find it. Open my phone. It's not at the hospital. It's near the hospital. And of course, the directions on where you go is in an A4 PDF attached to the email, which is very useful for reading on your phone in the rain. And then the address isn't the address isn't on there clearly either, because normally what you do is with the, you know, if someone emails you an address, you just stick it in Google Maps and away you go. So I was like looking at a map on my phone like it was some kind of buried treasure.
It's a non-interactive PDF. Yeah, like that's the one I had too. You can't click on the PDF to then like get the address.
No, there's no links in there. No, of course not.
Image? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's like trying to find a buried treasure. It's like, X mark the spot for the unmarked tent in the car park ye be looking for.
I'm starting to think maybe we went to the same hospital.
We did, yes.
Yeah, we did, okay.
So by my count, we checked in 4 times. So you go at the car park, they take your temperature.
And a bracelet.
Yeah. At the car park, they take your temperature and just check you haven't been in a hot spot. You get a mask and a sticker. Then you walk 6 blocks to like this weird kind of uni building. You wait in a lecture hall with very weird like trance music playing and like this bad screen slideshow on the screen for I don't know why. And then you queue up again, that's where you show your ID, and your Medicare card and your ID, and you get the wristband.
And by this stage, you have like a wristband. You got like you're covered in stickers. And there's trance music playing. It's basically like a goof in the 90s.
pretty much. And then you go back to the lecture hall, and you have to put up with this music some more. And
I quite
then
like lecture hall, but you sit down for a minute and in a large room full of people.
It's weird because it was freezing cold day. It was like the coldest Sydney day in 20 years or something when I went. So everyone's wearing jackets and you're just boiling hot, which probably, thank God they took our temperature before that. And then you go upstairs and you're like, oh, great, this is the jab. No, you sit down and you answer more questions about your medical history. And then they give you another sticker, which you stick on you, which is great. And the thing I loved is at this stage, they're like, do you have any other medical questions or issues you want to raise I've looked at today? Because maybe there's people who've turned up who are like, oh, I'm bleeding from the ear once an hour, you know, or something like that. They're like, oh, they're at a hospital. Maybe we should see if there's any other issues. Personally, all I wanted to say was I've got a big pain in my neck from all this bureaucracy. I don't think I had to show this much ID to get a mortgage, by the way.
You have a mortgage? You're a Gen X on the cusp of Gen Y in Sydney and you have a mortgage? That's incredible.
I did. It's a very small studio apartment, but yes. So then you get another sticker. And then you go upstairs to get your shot. And then when you get your shot, you get another sticker. So with the time written on it, you got your shot.
Yeah.
So at this stage, I'm basically resembling like a 1990s high school binder or like an activist laptop. I'm covered with so many stickers. And then
funny because the vaccine is like a reinforcement. So
yeah. And then everyone gets observed. And I had an allergic reaction once to something. So I had to wait 30 minutes. And the observation area resembled like a dreary 1980s Soviet era high school detention room. There was lino floors, like, you know, analog clocks. The seats were all separated out. It was like if Mikhail Gorbachev had directed The Breakfast Club. It was.
and the thing is, like, I feel so silly for mentioning that I had allergies at that point because you have to sit there for like half an hour. But my allergy, like, you know, she asked me what I was allergic to, and it's like dogs and oat dust. sorry, not dogs, cats. I thought I was cats and oat dust. Not oats, just oat dust. Because I had like a muesli bar once and something was a bit itchy. And I like muesli bars. I thought I was allergic to almonds. Apparently, no, it's not even, it's just the dust you get when you process oats, right?
My goodness.
So it's obscure, pointless. And it's not anaphylactic. It's just a little bit itchy sometimes, right? And so I had to sit and wait there for half an hour.
Yeah, any allergy, you've got to wait half an hour. But it's fine, you know, everyone is told to bring a tablet or a book or a podcast or something. So you can put
it in. But are there people who aren't allergic to anything? Like, is that even possible?
Well, if they are, they don't know it. This is Australia, you know, right. everyone's drinking soy milk or has an asthma puffer. So I'd say it's probably everyone's got something here. Look, I found the whole process fine. Yeah, it was about 2 hours. Look, it's not glamorous. We're not in America. We don't expect to have valet parking and a string quartet at our vaccine centres.
Would be nice though.
It would be nice. But look, they did get the job done, and it was a great experience. And this, I heard someone tell me the next day that they're getting through between 1,000 and 2,000 people a day here, which is just that's amazing. Good. And they've set this whole thing up in a matter of weeks or months, which is good. But I did have some side... Did you have any side effects? I felt... I don't know whether it's just I was working on like 5 projects that week, but I just felt fatigued and had to go to bed. But maybe I should just...
I just had a sore arm. I literally my arm was a bit sore for like a day. and it was funny actually, because I went to a party afterwards, and you could tell who'd had the vaccine. Like, there were just like a bunch of people who were just being super protective of their left arm. And it was like, and we just had like the secret nod of like, oh yeah, you got jammed today. Nice.
But I had a bit of sore arm, but I did feel massively fatigued. I don't know why. I heard that was more with the second dose.
I think it was probably having to answer all those questions, to be honest.
It was fatigue. Yeah. But
that would
it was
have fatigued me.
everyone's immune response is different. But like, thank God I wasn't like driving a forklift or flying an airplane that day. My plan to go to the gym after getting my shot was very ambitious. I realized I went straight home. Lay on the couch. No. I went straight home and chilled out for the day. Yeah.
Oh yeah, just picking up anything was just a bit like would just trigger it a bit, but no, it was fine. Like I was really impressed. Like once I got through the bureaucracy, I was super impressed.
You know, it's very rare our government gets something right. And look, this isn't perfect, but you know there's still a lot of people to cover. We're only covering 100,000 people a day in Australia at the moment.
We said 2,000. So that was 2,000 at the one hospital, or 2,000 in the state?
Just at that one hospital. Yeah.
Right. Oh, I was going to say, because 2,000 states, not great. Hospital, that's very impressive.
Well, look, hopefully I think we'll get walk-up clinics happening in New South Wales soon, so people can just, you know, grab a vaccine on your coffee run in the morning or something.
Crack a cold one. Yeah, exactly.
All right. Thanks for chatting, Dave. Anything you want to plug? Where can people find you and your stuff?
Oh, man, I wish I had something to plug. It's been so long. I have nothing to plug. You're welcome to come join me on Twitter at @i_before_e, because that's how long I've had a Twitter account. I had underscores. But other than that, maybe I could come back in a year or something and say, oh, I've got something to plug now, and just in the middle of someone else's interview. That'd be great.
Well, welcome back anytime. Always great to have you on the show.
Thanks, heaps. Cheers.
Thanks, Dave. See ya.
Bye.
Okay, everyone, that's News Fighters for today, June the 18th, 2020. A big thank you to Dave Bluestein for being on the show. And a quick heads up that we recorded that interview on Wednesday, right before the government changed the health advice on the vaccines. And now Pfizer is available for people up to 60, and AstraZeneca will only be for over 60s. So do a search of your local state for the vaccine registration of interest or eligibility criteria, and get on the waiting list and go get jabbed. And I was feeling very lucky and privileged to get my first jab last week. I hope I didn't sound like I was bragging in that interview, but I also feel especially lucky because we haven't had many COVID deaths in Australia recently, and I feel like we're ahead of a lot of other countries that are doing so badly at the moment. So to atone for that, I'm donating roughly the cost of my 2 jabs, which is about $60 Australian, to the Go Give One campaign for the World Health Organization Foundation and the Gavi COVAX AMC, which is donating and delivering vaccines to low-income countries. And I encourage everyone out there listening to go do the same when you get jabbed. Donate a jab. Pass it along. The website is gogiveone.org. That's gogiveone.org. News Fighters is written, presented, and produced by me, Dylan Bain, for Sans Pants Radio. Thanks for listening. Our episodes are going to be coming out around the weekend, Friday, Saturdays, for the next couple of months. Don't forget to check out our website at newsfighters.com. If you want to chuck us some money, we've got a Patreon, patreon.com/newsfighters, where you can get bonus episodes. And we're hoping to have the Apple Podcast subscription working as soon as Apple Podcast gets their act together. So you might be able to support us and get the bonus episodes on Apple Podcasts very soon. Or failing that, buy me a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/newsfighters. And don't forget, follow us on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook as well. All right, that's it. Keep fighting, and bye for now.
This is News Fighters, where we fight the news so you don't have to.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.